We have a list of bills, all with the same common theme here. And we will start with House Bill 2982, and we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2982. Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2982 comes to you from the Committee on Judiciary at the request of the Oregon Bankers Association, and 2982 extends the time period for which certain law enforcement agencies may obtain limited customer account information from banks and other financial institutions from 15 days before and after the transaction to 3 months before and after the transaction. Applies to criminal investigations, also updates definitions and references.
Thank you, and we are honored today to have Tom Perrick from the Oregon Bankers Association and Sheriff Ramirez and Jeff Kerr. Kerr? You'll have to correct me if I'm wrong here.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Tom Perrick. I'm President and Chief Executive Officer of the Oregon Bankers Association, representing Oregon's commercial banks, savings banks, thrifts, and trust companies throughout the state of Oregon. I'm here today to speak favorably and in support of House Bill 2982. It is a bill brought to you by the Oregon Bankers Association and its membership, specifically our Bank Operations Committee. I will point out four key changes very briefly and then yield the floor to my law enforcement witnesses. First, the bill itself, we want to include trust companies in the definitions of financial institution. We do represent trust companies, and currently they are not part of the definition of financial institutions. So that's change number one. Number two, given today's business climate, we would also like to include the electronic documents under the term of financial records. So to include electronic documents as well as paper documents. Thirdly is to clarify the term state agency, since it is, in fact, those agencies and governmental agencies that issue subpoenas and issue investigative demands and the like. We'd like to clearly define state agencies, since it is those groups that we work closely with. And then finally, as Mr. Taylor points out, this bill would expand the time with which the law enforcement community can seek financial records. Currently, that time frame is 15 days, 30 days total, but 15 days on either side of the transaction. Working very closely with our Bank Operations Committee and the law enforcement community, we have compromised, and we come to you with a request to expand the time with which these financial records can be sought, and that time frame is 3 months on either side of the transaction in question. We think that that does pass muster with our membership. We think that it's the right thing to do from a corporate citizenship and a civic responsibility standpoint. And those are the four general changes brought forth by 2982.
Thank you. Welcome, Sheriff.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Raul Ramirez, Marin County Sheriff. I'm here to speak on behalf and in favor of House Bill 2982. When we venture into criminal investigations involving identity theft, financial fraud, those can be extensive investigations, and a 30-day time frame sometimes works for us, but more often it doesn't, because once we get into an investigation, we end up discovering other leads that would point us in the direction to expand our investigation with that particular account. By expanding this to in essence, 90 days on either side, it gives us that ability to address these criminal investigations in a manner that not only protects the victim, but ensures, investigations are done with speed and end up having the integrity of bringing them to a successful conclusion. So in that aspect, I support House Bill 2982.
Thank you. So under current law, if you go in on day 14 and you find some information that, say, 14 days after the date of the occurrence, okay, so if you get some information on day 14 and you investigate that and you find that you have a follow-up, need some follow-up information, you can't get it at all?
You want me to answer that?
Yeah.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Committee. My name is Jeff Kerr, and I'm the commanding officer of the RESIC Foundation, which is a task force that's comprised of multiple law enforcement agencies and the banking institutions. And what we have found is that when we conduct an investigation, we're allowed currently to go 15 days after and 15 days prior to the event that we're investigating. So at the time frame that we discover the crime that has occurred, that it surrounds the event of when the transaction took place, not when law enforcement finds out about the investigation.
I see.
So what we did was we went to the banking institutions and worked very closely together in coming up with a compromise where it would allow law enforcement to go 90 days prior to the criminal event and 90 days after the criminal event to make sure that the victim of that crime has all of the criminal transactions discovered by law enforcement for prosecution purposes.
I see. Okay, I was mistaking the timing with the actual occurrence of the records.
Madam Chair.
Senator Walker.
Thank you. Gentlemen, I know the answer to this question, but I want to get it on the record. So I'm just going to ask you, you would not turn over any bank records without a subpoena or any other type of investigative demand, would you, Mr. Parrott?
Madam Chair, Senator Walker, thank you for the question. That's absolutely correct. Right now, it requires a subpoena or some official action, grand jury action, most notably. And so it is not an opportunity for law enforcement, broadly defined, district attorneys, et cetera, to merely just walk in and request information.
Thank you. I want to make sure the public was aware of that.
Thank you for getting that on the record, Senator Walker. Are there other questions from the committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We will close the public hearing on House Bill 2982, and we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2983. Council.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, House Bill 2983 comes to you from the Judiciary Committee at the request of the Oregon Bankers Association. This bill lowers the age of persons to whom special rates or services are permitted under the law that prohibits discrimination based on age by place of public accommodation. It lowers that age from 55 to 50.
Get my sign-up sheet. There we go. Tim Martinez and Rick Bennett.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Tim Martinez, on behalf of the Oregon Bankers Association, we did introduce 2983 after a review of the statute last session. We discovered that it was age 55 and above. We have several institutions around the state that are offering services, Charter 50, Club 50, different names depending on the institution, that currently could face some legal action by offering it to 50 rather than 55. Federal law allows this at age 62 unless the state says otherwise, and we just want to make it very clear to the chair and the rest of the committee that we're not suggesting that age 50 is when people ought to retire. We're not suggesting that's a typical retirement age. We certainly understand the arguments that some folks made on the other side that maybe 18 to 25 year olds ought to be who this is targeted to, but this is strictly permissive and would allow banks and other financial institutions, as well as retailers and restaurants, and my colleague here to the right will talk about his group as well, to make it available at 50 and above. So we look to you for support on this legislation.
Okay. Other questions from the committee? Thank you very much. Welcome.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, for the record, Rick Bennett representing AARP Oregon. Tim's explained the situation fairly well. With 460,000 members who are 50 years old or older, we felt it was reasonable to support the legislation as well.
Okay, under current law, I know that my rite of passage when I turned 50 came because my AARP card arrived about 4 months before. I said, how did they know? How could
they
tell?
We have a tremendous database.
So are you saying that with the age 50 threshold that you have now, that you're out of compliance with state law?
Good question. Frankly, I'm not aware of us being out of compliance with any state or federal law as far as membership in our organization goes.
Well, but you have offered discounts of various sorts with AARP. Is that, would this bill have any impact on that?
I'm not aware of having the national organization having any particular endorsement or arrangement with a particular bank at this time that's presented only to our members.
Because this is broader than just banks. This bill is broader than banks.
You're absolutely right, though. On a national basis, our organization endorses or has various arrangements with a number of different providers and a variety of services and so forth, but I'm not aware of this being in conflict with anything we do at the national level.
No, I think it wouldn't be in conflict the way I read it, because the minimum age to get into AARP is 50 years. But right now, under existing law, the age is 55 for preferential.
Madam Chair, if I may interject, we certainly would not want to speak for AARP and their attorneys, but our bank counsel suggests very strongly that any group that's offering a service right now targeted to 50 and above is in violation of this statute and would potentially be at risk for class action or other legal action against them.
And I assume that restaurants that offer, cheaper meals for over 50 would be at risk as well.
Madam Chair, that's correct. And we have indeed had several of our institutions around the state, our banking institutions around the state, put their 50 and above programs on hold because their either inside or outside counsel is nervous enough about potential action that they wanted to wait until the legislature cleared this up.
I wonder if we could make this mandatory so they'd have to offer free stuff to 50-year-olds. What do you think? Committee, let's take a poll here.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm thinking I should probably declare a potential conflict of interest, so I won't be 50 for another year.
Let the record show that Senator Walker is under 50.
I will only be 49 this month.
Well, happy birthday, Senator Walker. I wish I could say the same. Okay.
October. Well, let the record show this bill doesn't affect me at all.
Well, I guess we see one no vote, don't we? Okay. Are there other questions from the committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Close the hearing on House Bill 2983 and open a public hearing on House Bill 3324.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, House Bill 3324 comes to you from the Committee on Business and Labor and Consumer Affairs at the request of the Oregon Bankers Association. Allows an Oregon chartered bank or trust company to organize as a limited liability company as an alternative to being organized as a corporation.
Thank you. Return appearance by Mr. Martinez and Fred Hostelwaite. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you again, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Once again, Tim Martinez, you're going to get tired of me in the next hour. I apologize for that, but, the chair giving us all these bills on the same day means you won't have to see me too many more times, hopefully before your committee. 3324 is a bill, again, from the Oregon Bankers Association. It deals with banks' abilities to form as limited liability companies. In 1993, the legislature granted corporations in Oregon that authority to form as LLCs. Banks were not included in that legislation at the time, primarily because you could not get deposit insurance through FDIC. So it made no sense to have an ability to organize as an LLC when you couldn't provide deposit insurance on your deposits. 10 years later, in 2003, the FDIC had, in their mind, had a history of how LLCs were working in other professions and industries, and made the determination and issued rules that indeed LLCs were an okay form of bank charter. We come before you in 2005 asking that the state make that, give that, grant their approval as well, because until the state passes this this particular bill, banks will not be able to form in that way. Mr. Postlewaite, I think, will have some very interesting testimony that supports why we think this is an important issue, primarily to Oregon's community banks and those that want to form Oregon's community banks. So with that, I turn it over to Mr. Postlewaite.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Fred Postlewaite, president of Oregon Community Bank in Newport, Oregon, and second office in the unincorporated community of Pacific City. Our bank is 2 years and 10 months old, having opened on July 8, 2002. Our Pacific City office was opened the 1st of April in 2004, so it's just a little over a year old. We're a community bank chartered and regulated by the state of Oregon and insured by the FDIC. Our lending area includes Lincoln and Tillamook counties, and our loan portfolio consists of small business loans, commercial real estate, single-family residential and consumer loans, and anything else needed in our communities, because that's what we're there for. We're attuned to meet those local demands. Among those special borrowing needs are loans to fishermen for boats, gear, and processing, to farmers for dairy, cows, feed, and land. We've financed aquaculture projects, such as oyster farms, made loans to loggers for operating capital, equipment, and the purchase of small woodlots. We loan to hotels, bed and breakfasts, and restaurants, and then we make the usual loans. Now, the list I made of loans we make to you are not high-profile loans. They're loans that some of them are old-fashioned loans to resource-type industries, and they're small, they're localized in our particular area, and it takes someone like a community bank to have an interest in it. We urge your adoption of this HB 3324 permitting a bank to organize or convert to a limited liability company. It'll increase competition, provide additional dividends to our shareholders, and most importantly, give Oregon Community Banks a 21st century organizational model better suited to help them continue to provide fundamental financial services to Oregon small communities. Now, I'm especially aware of the survival issue because I have recent experience with it, and not necessarily pleasant experience. I was president and CEO of Lincoln Security Bank in Newport from its organization in 1996 to its sale to a larger bank in 2001. The sales offer was unsolicited, but the $25 per share price for stock originally offered at 10, just 5 years before, was financially very fair to our shareholders. At 5 years of age, we're still a very young bank and had not, as yet, paid any dividends to our shareholders. Had we been either a subchapter S corporation or a limited liability company and been paying dividends to our shareholders, we may have been able to keep local control of Lincoln Security Bank. The bank's shareholders were fairly treated by the offer, but many of the other stakeholders in the bank, its borrowers, employees, and local merchants selling goods and services to the bank and community groups, lost something in that sale. However, we were fortunate in several respects. We still had an experienced community banking staff, a committed group of individuals willing to become bank directors, and most importantly, a vibrant community with a long tradition of locally owned and operated banks. Technically, Lincoln County is a disadvantaged county, one of six in Oregon's 36 counties eligible for guaranteed loans from the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. Still, we will raise the $4.75 million in capital required by our regulators to capitalize the bank in less than 60 days. 140 investor owners, all but about 10 of them immediately within the county, within our area there, and the other 10 were friends and relatives of mine from outside the county. The one question they always had was, how can we assure that the new Oregon Coast Bank will be there for the community in the years to come? Well, there is a way, and it involves modernizing the corporate structure for state-chartered banks. In 2001, we had few options to offer our shareholders, and the economic pendulum was swinging very definitely in the direction of continued buying and consolidation of these banks. There was, however, one option that was developing. Subchapter S banks, the very smallest family-owned banks, mostly in the Midwest, were converting from older traditional C-corporation format. It didn't fit many banks because of its limitation of 75 shareholders and a requirement that none of the stock be purchased with IRA funds. In October 2004, Congress, thanks in part to support of Senators Smith and Wyden, Representatives Walden, Hooley, and Rue, approved new Subchapter S legislation, raising the number of shareholders from 75 to 100 and allowing IRA purchase stock in an S corporation. At present, there are 3,000 Subchapter S banks across the land, with two of them in Oregon. There is a second option, and that's HB 3324 before you today. Current Oregon banking law, well, Tim did a very nice surmise of that. There is one bank, community bank in Utah, that's filed for an LLC conversion, and that application is before the FDIC. I don't know of any action on that yet. Additionally, we're advised that the Comptroller of the Currency, regulator to the national banks across the country, is looking at authority to authorize similar regulation providing limited liability companies. Were that to happen, one option for Oregon banks would be to convert from their state charter to a national charter. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for a host of reasons, we prefer to remain an Oregon state chartered bank and hope that the LLC option will be present. Very frankly, neither of these two options, the amended subchapter S legislation or the proposed LLC legislation in HB 3324, is a perfect fit for Oregon Coast Bank. Were we forming the bank today, we would do it with specific design to more closely conform to one or the other structures. That being said, it is the plan of the Board of Directors of Oregon Coast Bank to review both options, if available, and submit a proposal for conversion to our shareholders later this year, if we can figure out a way to do it. We believe the primary benefit of this bill will be to new banks organized in the coming years in Oregon. Future bank founders will look at both the sub-S and LLC options' economic viability and will choose the one they believe best fits with their bank and the communities that they will serve. In March, testimony before the House Committee on Business, Labor, and Consumer Affairs, specific questions were asked about this bill's impact on taxation and revenue. The Oregon Department of Revenue has issued a statement that they believe the state revenue impact will be negligible. That statement seems reasonable when you consider that the current C corporations pay Oregon taxes at a 6% rate on all earned income, and shareholders pay individual taxes only on any dividends paid to them. A LLC bank passes 100% of the tax liabilities to its member owners, who will then pay a 9% tax rate on all earned income. Second line of questioning asks about the differences between an LLC bank and a credit union with regard to taxation. As mentioned above, an LLC bank passes 100% of the tax liabilities on all earned income to its member owners who pay the Oregon tax as part of their personal returns. Credit unions, 100% of all federal and state tax liabilities are waived and no taxes are paid. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to appear here today. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Questions to the committee? Senator Whitsitt.
Madam Chair, Mr. Postlewaite, what amount of working capital is allowed to be held undispersed in an LLC? I'm kind of familiar with an S corporation, but not with a limited liability company. So what, at the end of the year, are you allowed to hold undispersed profits for working capital? And if so, how much or what by any percentage basis?
If we were to make, say we were to make $100,000 in profit, that profit would be passed on a percentage basis to the individual members. They would get a tax liability, and say somebody has $1,000 of that. The Board of Directors has a separate decision. Now that $1,000 liability goes to the member owner, and they have to put that into their tax return. Whether any cash goes to them or not is up to the Board of Directors. Now it's kind of a question of good faith that something will be passed on so at least the taxes can be paid. So the Board of Directors will determine what and how much, and basically they could choose to give none, in which case the people would have to pay the taxes on $1,000 out of their pocket, or they could pass it all through, mm-hmm. depending on a little on their own capital needs and how fast the bank is growing.
But all the tax liability is just
passed on.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions from the committee? Thank you. Anybody else want to talk on this one? Ms. Leavitt, come on up.
Does she want to change and make the credit unions LLCs?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Pam Leavitt with the Credit Union Association of Oregon. I just wanted to correct the record in the previous statement where it says member owners who pay the Oregon tax as part of their personal returns with credit unions, 100% of the federal and state tax liabilities are waived and no taxes are paid. That's incorrect. Our members do pay taxes on the dividends that they receive also. So I just wanted to correct that record. Credit unions are organized as not-for-profit cooperatives and are exempt from federal and state income, but the members do pay taxes on their dividends.
For the dividends that they
yes.
get, as well as the interest that they might get on their
correct. Account. I just thought I'd correct that.
I appreciate that. Any questions of Ms. Leavitt? Thank you very much. Okay. We will close the public hearing on House Bill 3324 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2632. Mr. Martinez is back again.
Thanks.
summarize the bill.
Oh, yes. Please summarize the bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2632 comes to you for Committee of Judiciary at the request of the Oregon Bankers Association. Changes the interest rate on specific monetary bequests under a world from 5% a year to the discount rate, which is defined in average auction rate of 91-day Treasury bills.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Tim Martinez still. And 2632 comes to you again from the Oregon Bankers Association. Basically, as explained to the individual members of the committee, when you have an estate and you're paying out the proceeds from the estate, if it takes longer than a year for those proceeds to be paid out, the individuals that have not yet been paid are eligible to receive 5% interest on what they're owed. That's not something that the bank pays. It comes out of the estate. So what we would like to do in this low interest rate time is to go ahead and adjust that to a 90-day T-bill so it'll float with the market. There was no testimony opposed to this bill on the other side, and it was one of those rare bills where all 60 members were on the floor and voted aye.
Thank you. It's fair to have them on the floor, let alone all vote aye. Other questions from the committee? Thank you very much. Why don't you stay put, and we'll close the hearing on House Bill 2632. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2633. Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2633 comes to you from the Committee on Judiciary at the request of the Oregon Bankers Association and replaces an incorrect reference to trusts in a statute regarding compensation for probate proceedings.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Tim Martinez, Oregon Bankers Association. We believe in a Scribner's bill a few years ago. We didn't catch a change in language that we should have dealing with the personal representatives. The current law says that the court may allow extra compensation for, quote, extraordinary and unusual services not ordinarily required of a personal representative in the discharge of a trust. That language really doesn't make sense, and it should say instead extraordinary and unusual services not ordinarily required of a personal representative in the performance of duties as a personal representative. So that's the only change we make, and it really is our Scribner's bill for 2005.
Any questions for the committee? Council.
And Chair, members of the committee. Mr. Martinez, I take it that when you're dealing with an estate, you're dealing with a personal representative. When you're dealing with a trust, you're dealing with a trustee. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Council, that's correct.
Thanks.
Okay, other questions? Thank you very much. Stay put. We will close the public hearing on House Bill 2633. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2980.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2980 comes in from the committee on the judiciary at the request of the Oregon Bankers Association, specifies that notice of non-judicial foreclosure sale involving a trust deed is effective when it is mailed. First class mail and certified mail receipt requested.
This is your last shot, so make it good.
All right, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Tim Martinez, Oregon Bankers Association. I'm apologetic to report that this bill only had 58 ayes. There was two folks absent that day. I look at it as a great example of when we adjust statute to what the courts have said, and this is deals with the non-judicial foreclosure of trust deeds, as counsel indicated, specifically when a notice of sale is deemed to be served. There's two options in the current law. One is personal service, the other is by mail, but it's not simply just by dropping it in the mailbox. It's got to be first class, it's got to be certified, and it's got to be return receipt requested. With no offense to the lawyers up at the dais, one of the 11,000 in the state thought there may have been a way to change this and took one of our members to court, said, no, it really ought to be when I get it in my mailbox, not when you mail it. The court said, no, this is a well-understood method, and it works. The first class certified in return is about the highest mailing you can ask of anybody to do, and the court sided in our favor and said, let's continue this process. We would now like to put that into statute. And again, there was no opposition on the Senate or the House side. Excuse me.
Okay. Questions from the committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We will close the hearing on House Bill 2980, and. Committee, I wanted to kind of wait till all these were heard. I think I'm going to work our way through some of these and see if we can get them out the door. So we will open a work session on House Bill 2982.
Madam Chair.
Senator Starr.
I move House Bill 2982 to the floor to do pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2982 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Objection? So ordered. I will carry this. Now we will open a work session on House Bill 2983. Senator Starr.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2983 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2983 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Pazansky.
I guess I have to just declare that I'm in that grace period of those 5 years since I just hit 50 last year. So just a potential conflict, even though I know there will be many others that are 50 to 55 that will benefit from this besides myself. I just thought I'd come clean before the vote.
Well, Senator Brzezinski, I admire your candor, and I'm glad that you made that personal disclosure. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Brzezinski, I think you're going to have to carry this.
I knew that was coming.
Four page credit.
Okay, we will now open a work session on House Bill 3324. Senator Starr.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3324 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 3324 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Whitsitt, would you like to carry this?
Sure.
Now we will open a work session on House Bill 2632.
Madam Chair, move House Bill 2632 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2632 to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Starr, would you like to carry that?
Absolutely.
All right.
Senator Beyer, you and I are going to get stuck here pretty soon.
We're working our way over there.
Process of elimination.
Okay, maybe you guys could draw straws. Okay, now we will open a work session. What did we just do? 32?
Yeah, 33 and 8
still left. House Bill 2633, we will open a work session. Senator Starr.
Move House Bill 2633 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2633 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Objection? So ordered. Okay, Senator Walker and Senator Barr, which one wants this?
Well, I'll take this one.
Senator Walker wants it. She spoke up quick. Senator Barr, you're in trouble. Okay.
It was the last one.
We will open up a work session. We never think of you as being in last place, Senator Barr.
No, we're
here. We will open up a work session on House Bill 2980. Senator Starr.
Move House Bill 2980 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2980 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
If I vote no, I don't carry it, right?
Senator Byers, it's too late. The gavel has fallen, and you are carrying House Bill 2980.
You should have made
Senate Judiciary is adjourned.
You're missing my duties.